It's 7 minutes after 12. Good afternoon and welcome to yet another load shed edition of the Xolani Gwala Show on Radio 702 and Cape Talk. My name is Clement Manyatela with you until 1 p.m. I'm standing in for XG. Now, coming up. That's it. That's the sound of what came out of that Eskom briefing. Nothing. Totally nothing new. In fact, if any, there is something. In fact, if there's something that you have to take away from that briefing, is that it's about to get real. So basically what's come out is that it's going to get worse. They also can't tell us when exactly Eskom and even government is going to try and be able to stop the rolling blackouts. We're going to be looking at this with EWN reporter Mia Lindeke, who was attending that briefing earlier today. Also, we'll look at the human cost of load shedding. We'll speak to a businessman who's been directly affected by the rolling power cuts. Plus, I don't know if you saw that Ipsos poll, which was released this morning, which indicates that the EFF could be the official opposition in three provinces. And it has the ANC at 61%, the DA at 18%, and the EFF at 10%. But also, on Friday, we told you about Makosi Khoza resigning from the organization and doing tax abuse. And the question was, is she going back to politics? Remember, she left her own organization, the African Democratic Change, when she actually moved over to be part of OUTA, and she said she was retiring from politics. But if you look at her resignation letter, it tells you just how much she, in fact, could be going back to politics. So we'll be having a conversation with her right here on the Xolani Gwala Show. So I love hearing from you. So please connect and engage with us. Our lines are open throughout the show on 011-883-0702. In Cape Town, we're on 021-446-0567. On SMS, we're on SMS in Joburg 31702 and in Cape Town 31567. If you prefer to WhatsApp us, we're on 072-702-1702. On Twitter, at Radio 702, at Cape Talk. My Twitter handle is at The Real Clement M. And 9 minutes after 12 now, you know, the Eskom management and public enterprises minister, Pravin Gordhan, were holding a briefing this morning. In fact, a short while ago, it's actually still on. I'm seeing it live now on the SABC, giving us an update on the electricity supply problems that the country has been facing lately. EWN reporter Mia Lindeke has been listening through to that press briefing by the public enterprises minister and the Eskom management. Mia, thank you so much for your time. So what's come out of this briefing? What are they telling us? When are they stopping load shedding?
Clement, it all comes down to Eskom and government still don't have the answers for how long South Africans will experience rolling blackouts. They hope to get a more clearer picture within about 10 days, they say, as a team of technicians investigate what caused the blackouts. But they admit that they have not communicated this adequately, and they promise that they will do so more frequently and update all the schedules to make it a bit more easier for South Africans. But Gordhan went that far to say that it will be a huge challenge to change this crisis. And he even said that, I mean, he doesn't have a magic wand. We all know that. But he says that people must be a bit more patient. They are trying to get to the bottom of all of this. They've also then laid out a spreadsheet for journalists to explain exactly how maintenance works and boilers, where a lot of tubes have basically cracked. And they're explaining once again why this is so important, that they have not done maintenance for the past 5 years. And this is about state capture, people enriching themselves, and obviously maladministration. And they say that this is now coming back. And they have to fix it as soon as possible. But as soon as they fix the problem, it breaks down because no maintenance was done as it was supposed to. Pravin Gordhan even hinted, took a swipe at Brian Molefe without saying his name when he was asked a question. And he said, maybe someone sitting at a shebeen said that, referring to the misinformation about previous Eskom management telling the media that they never underspent on maintenance.
Mia, definitely they have to do it as soon as possible. But a lot of people are listening to that briefing and thinking, but all we care about is what are you going to be doing in the immediate stages? And I'll come back to you just now, Mia, but I want you to listen to this clip of Minister of Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan, speaking about how long it may actually take before Eskom can somehow, or even the management and government, get a handle on this problem.
Be able to communicate to South Africans an answer to the question, how long will load shedding last? So the direct answer to that question is that we need to complete these investigations and that we will come back to you in the next 10 to 14 days in a similar form and equally frankly tell you where do we stand on the particular challenges we have. But more importantly, in order to ensure that we lighten the burden on South African business.
So, Mia, I remember there was a time, because what you're getting from that clip is that they still have to investigate, they still have to come back and report back on what the problem really is, the extent of the problem and how they're going to fix it. But there was some kind of a technical team or so that was appointed when we experienced load shedding for the first time this year. Do we know what they have found? Have they told us the outcome of that investigation that happened earlier this year?
That specific question was asked to the panel here, but they have tiptoed around it. We have still not received a direct answer to that question. And well, we also have a lot of international media looking at this story, Clement. A lot of international media asking the same questions, speaking of a possible downgrade, because people are looking at Eskom and what is going on. Gordon just is adamant, saying that Eskom will get it right. He said it will take about 2 years and we will turn it around. We're still waiting for that team of technicians from Italy and what they have found. Will they share it with the public? Well, Gordon says that they will be more open, and they even said that they will be more frank with the public and keep us in the loop, because they understand how frustrated the community is and how frustrated small and medium enterprises and small and medium companies are, because they are losing money. The more we have load shedding, the more people lose money.
Mia, let me allow you to go back into that briefing. Look, thank you so much for your time and giving us an update. But there's so much more that came out of that briefing, and I'm happy to take your calls. I'll be playing you some of the clips of what the Public Enterprises Minister had to say. Are you satisfied with what government and the Eskom management is saying this time around? Are you satisfied that they understand the extent of this problem and how they're going to go about fixing it? I mean, 2 years, it will take about 2 years before they fix this entire problem. The Italians still have to come. They're now going to investigate again. Even when they had established an investigation earlier this year, when we experienced load shedding for the first time this year, they now, so it's task team after task team. And I think the takers from that briefing is that, you know, they don't understand the nature and the extent of this problem. In fact, government, I was looking at a tweet that said government doesn't know how much longer load shedding will last. Another update will come in 2 weeks' time. The power plants are not running at optimum level. We already know that. They've been telling us that over the last few months. It's going to be a struggle to overcome this crisis. That's what the minister was saying. But also he's apologizing for the burden. Do you accept this apology? I mean, I just want to know what you're going to do as the Eskom management to fix this. And I want it to be fixed as soon as possible. And I wonder what you make of this. And I wonder if you are confident this time around that they somehow understand the extent and they're going to fix this problem. Take a listen to what Pravin Gordhan also had to say during that briefing.
The current crisis is, and certainly one of the outcomes of the crises that we had in relation to state capture, but you've heard a number of explanations here which are partly historical, partly technical, as you saw in terms of the age of the power stations and so on. This is not symptomatic, if I can give you the more direct answer, of a governance crisis. Eskom, in an interesting way, is also...
But also, he spoke about how this is more of a governance crisis.
This is not symptomatic, if I can give you the more direct answer, of a governance crisis. Eskom, in an interesting way, is also one of the challenges that we face as South Africans, and we know that as government, as the board and management and the staff in Eskom, we'll get it right in the next year or two.
will get it right in the next year or two. Is that enough? Do you have the patience to wait for the next year or two when government and Eskom actually eventually get it right? But unfortunately, in the meantime, there's a human cost to load shedding. And we've spoken to government, we've spoken to the ANC, we've spoken to Eskom, we spoke to energy analysts on this platform. But do we understand the kind of impact that these power cuts have, these rolling blackouts have on people? I'm going to speak to a business owner now who's going to speak to us about the kind of impact that he's been feeling, that his business has been feeling. But I'm also talking about, you know, that real problematic, troublesome impact. And I'm not just talking about your appliances being affected, you being inconvenienced with heavy traffic, you not being able to cook your favorite meal. I'm talking about when the power cuts cost the loss of human life. And I was looking at the tweet this morning as I was preparing for the show, and someone by the name of Monique Waits tweeted that my uncle died an hour ago. He was an elderly. He was hung on life until Eskom deprived him of oxygen due to load shedding. And then she goes on to say that, you know, my uncle had faults, but he definitely did not deserve to die because of a lack of electricity. He didn't deserve to die because he was deprived of oxygen as a result of load shedding. Think about that. It's 18 minutes after 12. Okay, let's look at the impact on businesses now. Trevor Nell is a business owner, in fact, owns Lucky Bean Restaurants in Melville. Trevor, thank you so much for your time. How heavily have you been affected by these power cuts?
Hi, good afternoon, Clement. Thank you so much for taking our call. And we've been quite heavily affected from keeping stock in fridges. We've had to start change our whole workway our workflow to get orders in every day so we don't run out or don't have stock sitting in fridges going off. So it kind of impacts on our productivity during the week. And our business, being a restaurant and an international restaurant, we get almost 70% of our clients are international guests. And I must say it's not boding well with the talk on with a lot of visitors at the moment that we see on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's not just visitors that you have to worry about, Trevor, because you also have employees that need to get paid. And if you're not having patrons coming through because you are load shed, that means that you're going to have problems even with paying your employees. How much of a problem is it then, you know, when it comes to that responsibility of also having to pay these employees that you have, yet you are getting being sabotaged essentially by these power cuts?
Well, at the same time, we had to provide employment for employees and for people. It's a tough one. I mean, we struggle to make I don't want to release any staff because of load shedding, but you know, it comes to a point where you've got to start looking at these things because it's an impact. It is impacting our business on a daily basis.
Mm. Trevor Nell, look, thank you so much for your time. He's the owner of the Lucky Bean Restaurant. And I was saying that there's a human cost to this, but there's also cost to businesses, the cost to the economy. And that's why we needed to speak to Trevor, so that we remind ourselves also about how extensive this impact is. And I read you that tweet, you know, someone saying their uncle died. Do we get it? Do we understand it? That's how deep the crisis is. I'm happy to take your calls. I'll be taking them after the break on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. It's 21 minutes after 12. 24 minutes after 12, I see that Eskom briefing has just concluded. But Bekani, you want to speak about that, and you are saying that it's surprising that the Eskom board members are still getting these fat salaries, even in the midst of this crisis.
It's actually nauseatingly irritating what they're doing to the South Africans, the whole country actually. But you know, they continue, not only the board, even the management, they continue to draw their set salary, and the company that they're running is going into ground. It's really surprising. How can you run a company that is failing, but you continue to draw your salaries if everything is hunky-dory?
Hmm. Bekani, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Neil in Sandton. Neil, thank you so much for calling us. Good afternoon to you. What's your comment?
I've got medical oxygen, and I'm watching as people whose oxygen machines won't work with their power and they're doing load shedding. And the only option is for them to cylinder oxygen, and it costs 400 rand a day. And these people just can't afford it, and they're on limited budgets. And I'm just watching some of these people just like almost stressing themselves to death.
Mm.
And it's quite sad.
No, definitely. It's so sad. Neil and Senton, really appreciate your time. 25 minutes after 12. We'll continue that conversation. I'll read more of your messages. I'm seeing your SMSs on 31702, 31567, but also getting your tweets and your voice notes. I keep them coming, but just make sure you keep them short. You can send them at 072-702-1702. But let's look at this now. Last week, we told you about Judge Mandela Makaula, who recused himself from the rape trial of controversial pastor Timothy Omatoso. This was after Omatoso's lawyer, Peter Doberman, previously pushed for the judge's recusal, accusing him of being biased following the testimony of the first witness, Cheryl Zondi. But also remember, it emerged at a later stage that certain witnesses were allegedly being accommodated at a guest house owned by Makaula. Well, the judge spoke out on Friday saying that his wife owns that guest house and he has no financial interest, in the business and plays no role. But he also said that he decided to recuse himself so that there's no doubt around his credibility. But what this effectively means is that the trial has to start from scratch. And the person who will be heavily affected by this is Cheryl Zondi. And she held a press briefing earlier today. And we're going to speak to Togo Mkhwanazi Xaluva now, who is the chair, the deputy chairperson of the Cheryl Zondi Foundation. Thank you so much for your time. I suppose the question that, you know, everybody, most people have been wanting to ask Cheryl Zondi is how she felt when she found out that she would have to go back to court to relive that trauma and tell those harrowing stories again and face her alleged perpetrator. How did she feel?
She was quite devastated, I must say, but she's a very strong young woman, and she felt she needs to do this because the truth will never change color, irrespective of how many times you tell the truth. The truth will survive time and any innuendos and suggestions that may come from anywhere.
Mm.
But she's very strong. Of course, strength is also, you know, we need to be realistic. You can be strong, but she's got her good days and her bad days.
Mm. I mean, I was listening to her briefing earlier today, and she was talking about how, you know, taking the stand at the time was very difficult and agonizing. Is she prepared to do it again, to go through that secondary victimization?
She is fully prepared to go through secondary traumatization and victimization. She is strong. She's got the support of her family. She's got the support of the foundation and a whole range of South Africans who have showed that support to her. But also, not only is she just standing up for herself, since the launch of the foundation, there have been many, many other victims who have felt empowered to come out and tell their stories.
Mm.
You know, they've got different stories to tell, and her point of departure is that she cannot let them down. But also, she wants to tell her story, and she's capable of doing that. Of course, she's a student. She's 23. 2 weeks ago, she turned 23. And trauma is just trauma. We just need to support her to go through this very difficult time again.
Mm, but then there's also something else that she has to face. You know, Omatoso's lawyer, Peter Doberman, who was asking some ridiculous questions, you know, when he was examining Cheryl Zondi, you know, about the size of Omatoso's penis, for example. Is she... you know, ready to be cross-examined by him again? Or, you know, are there plans in place to try and avoid that? And I'm not sure if you've got that legal option to also perhaps apply for not to be cross-examined by that particular lawyer.
Well, she doesn't have that option, unfortunately. She left to be cross-examined. It might still ask the same questions again. One thing Cheryl is aware of is that she doesn't have any control over what the defense lawyer does. But she's got control over how she responds to that.
Mm. All right, Toko Mkhwanazi Xaluva is the deputy chairperson of the Cheryl Zondi Foundation. Look, thank you so much for your time. And I mean, we spoke about this on Friday, but I'm happy to take more of your calls on what you think of this. I mean, if you're a lawyer, also tell us if she has that option to say, actually, I'm not happy with the kind of questions I was getting from this particular lawyer, and I want to actually apply that there be a different lawyer who cross-examines me in this case, given the kind of questions and the opposition that, you know, Omotoso's lawyer also got, even from the judge himself, who said those were totally unfair and ridiculous questions. 12:30.
Good day, Clement. I am a fashion designer. I'm so irritated about this load shedding that happens literally all the time in the Greenstone area. I'm actually mad. I'm angry because as a fashion designer, you have to use your sewing machine. What am I supposed to do when deadlines are here and I can't finish my outfits? Already we are living in a bad economy. These people are just not working on the clock. They're not taking us serious because, come on, there should be heads that rolls or something. I think we are not taken serious. And some of our business, we are just going to collapse. What is it that we're going to do to feed our kids? Fashion design is one thing that I do best. So I'm so angry.
Yo, I can feel that anger, and I can tell you a lot of people can feel it too, and they're experiencing it as well. Someone says, and obviously this is response to that ESCOM briefing that happened earlier on with the Minister of Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan, and the ESCOM executive. There was the CEO, Paramani Khadebe, and the ESCOM board chair, Jabu Mabuza. So Mabuza, in fact, also during that briefing said, we are far from a national blackout. You know, does that give you, you know, that level of, okay, as long as we're still okay? Because some people are making an argument also on SMSs that at least Pravin Gordhan didn't give us, you know, some false hope. You know, he was being real and telling us that it will take about 2 years for us to sort out this problem once and for all. We're still waiting for the Italians to come and help us. There's a technical team that's investigating and will come back in 10 days to tell us what on earth is going on and how we can start fixing it. But are you satisfied with that? Do you even have the patience to stay and spend another 10 days experiencing this level of rolling blackouts? Do you have patience to experience 2 more years of rolling blackouts while government tries to figure out what on earth is happening? Someone else sending an SMS on 31702 and 31567. That Clement, the families of anyone who dies of lack of oxygen due to outages can sue the government because they pay for the services of electricity via their property rates and taxes. They'll have to refund all citizens for not honoring their obligation to supply electricity to all persons who pay property rates and taxes. And I also want to say thank you to Zunaid from Pretoria. I asked a question earlier that can Cheryl Zondi, because now it's pretty clear she'll have to go back on the stand when the trial starts from scratch and face her alleged perpetrator again. So I was asking the question, given that there were so many concerns around the you know, Omotoso's lawyer and the kind of questions that he was asking Cheryl Zondi, does she have an option to actually say, you know, or for even her legal team to say she can be cross-examined by this kind of individual again when the trial starts? And Zunaid SMS'd us and said, hi, Clement, I'm an attorney from Pretoria. A witness cannot decide who cross-examines them. You will remember that Mzwanele Manyi asked asked that someone different cross-examines him in the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, and that was not allowed. To allow that would be a direct infringement on a person's fundamental right to choose their legal representative. All that can happen is that the prosecutors can object to the line of questioning and the judge then makes a ruling. That's Zunaid from Pretoria. Thank you so much, Zunaid, for that SMS. We still have more of your voice notes.
Hi, Clement. This government of ours thinks that when they use phrases, and we have these seasonal phrases, and talk shops, and commissions, and inquiries, that that's going to fix things. Fixing things doesn't come right by talking. Fixing things comes by doing things differently. But they think they can carry on business as usual. All the old corrupt contracts are still in place. Nothing has changed. But hopefully we're going to do things differently. Shame.
I get you. I get what you mean there. It's 19 minutes before 1 o'clock. Let's change you now and look at this. There is a new Ipsos poll which indicates that the EFF could be the official opposition party in 3 provinces. So the poll was released this morning, assuming a medium-sized turnout of voters on election day. It predicts that the ANC would get about 61% of the vote, the DA 18%, and the EFF 10%. This is the country's largest poll, and they spoke to about 3,600 people. Let's speak to Marie Harris, who's a senior client officer at Ipsos. Marie, thank you so much for your time. Good afternoon to you. Did you find that President Cyril Ramaphosa somehow lifted the ANC's fortunes to 61%? What did you attribute this to?
Hello, Clement. Yes, I do think that President Ramaphosa is a big vote puller for the ANC. And we can see it if we look at the trust indexes, because we compile an index of how much trust people have in political parties and also in political leaders. And if we look at Cyril Ramaphosa's trust, the trust index from all registered voters for him is 45%. Mm. But if we just look at the registered supporters of the ANC, it's 83%. And he also gets a score of 6.71 out of 10. That is a lot better than any of the other political leaders in the country. And in fact, both Musi Maimane and Julius Malema's trust index is negative if we look at all voters in the country. But if we look at supporters of their own parties, their trust is very, very high. So what I'm saying is that DA supporters have a very high trust in Musi Maimane. EFF supporters have very high trust in Julius Malema. But in general, the population have more trust in Cyril Ramaphosa.
Oh, that's quite interesting. So with the DA, I see that, you know, it's a 4 percentage points below its 22.2% outcome in 2014 in the last general elections, because I see now they're standing at 18% according to your poll. What are some of, you know, the issues that the respondents were raising, you know, that somehow led to the DA going 4 percentage points down?
You know what? I think we're in a very different world from what we have been in 2014. This 2019 election is a different election. First of all, we have a different president in the country, which has a huge influence. Then I do think the DA did themselves no favors last year with all the internal issues they had, the exit of Patricia de Lille and all those sorts of things. We actually measured the DA much lower last year than the 18% where they currently are. So they are actually trying to mend those issues, and they are, you know, increasing their support. A lot of people also are sitting on the fence. They are not exactly sure whether they will vote or which party to vote for. And even if you talk to your friends, lots of people are saying they don't know who to vote for. I do think a lot of people will still make up their minds before the election. I can't put my head on a block about it, obviously, at this stage. We are doing another poll just before the election, and I hope we will have more clarity there.
Yeah. And I wonder if the fortunes are going to change for some of these political parties. Now, the IEC has told us that there are about 26.7 million South Africans that are registered to vote. And you estimate in this poll that there are probably about 8 to 9 million South Africans that won't turn out to vote. Why is that the case? Why are South Africans so alienated?
First of all, you know, there's about 10 million people who are not even registered. And then there's another about 8 or 9 million that will not turn up to vote. The reason is because there's so many, a lot of people say, well, why do we vote? We haven't seen a lot of change, so we're not going to vote. We're staying away from the polls. Other people say they don't know who we want to vote for. So that is the reason why we look at the results and don't only present the results for registered voters, because that is not what's going to happen on election day. On election day, a certain proportion of the people who are registered are going to turn out to vote. At the moment, well, we say about 80% of them. It depends on the figures because it can change as well. And you need to do a specific algorithm to work out how many people are convinced that they will turn out at the polls.
All right. Look, thank you so much for your time. Mari Harris is a senior client officer at Ipsos. If you're one of those alienated potential voters, let me know. Give me a call on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Is it because you just don't trust politicians, or is it because politicians say a lot of things and just don't deliver? I'm happy to take your calls on that. It's 13 minutes before 1 o'clock. All right, so we've been telling you about that Eskom briefing that happened this morning. A lot of you reacting with anger because you're saying that there was not much coming from the Eskom executives on what exactly they're going to be doing to stop load shedding, you know, with urgency. Well, the Eskom CEO, Phakamani Khadebe, joins us now on the line. Mr. Khadebe, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the Xolani Gwala Show.
Thank you so much, sir, for having me here.
So what was the purpose of today's briefing? A lot of people are asking me, what really came out? What is Eskom's message to South Africans who particularly want to know when load shedding is going to end?
Yeah, we needed to explain to South Africans the challenges that we are facing for us to have gone to stage four. And we highlighted in simple terms that the biggest challenge we are facing is all power stations that are falling through. That's the first thing, and we're trying to fix that. But secondly, the new power stations that are supposed to complement the new power stations have not been doing well. And so they're producing almost 40% of what is expected. And in the meantime, what we've been trying to do to ensure that there's electricity in South Africa was to use the diesel, but we have exhausted that diesel. It's no more. Hence the challenge.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, we have a 9-point plan that we've been working on in ensuring that South Africans have adequate power as we move forward. But the biggest challenge is that we have noted that we have a lot of our stations that are tripping because maintenance has not been done for quite some time.
And Mr. Khadebe, I think most of the challenges that Eskom is facing, I think most South Africans sort of have an idea. And we always speak about those kind of challenges that Eskom is facing, you know, the poor maintenance, the governance challenges as well. But I want to speak about the technical team that is now going to look at this and the Public Enterprises Minister, that they'll come back in 10 days. How many of these teams do we need? I mean, when we experienced load shedding for the first time this year, you announced that there would be a team that's going to go on a fact-finding mission to find out what went wrong, how can we fix it? What's the outcome of that, you know, that team, the outcome of that report and the investigation? And why are we getting another team now to also go look at what was potentially the same things that the old team was looking at?
Yeah, I can explain that. The team came and we put on a 9-point plan. And we highlighted that there were 63 outages that needed to be dealt with. But what we have since learned is that there are more problems as we go through that. Let me make an example of the outages or the trips that have taken place. We started in November And by end of February, we were hoping that we will have done 25 outages. But by end of 25, we've done 23 outages. But over and above those 23 outages, there were 30 more that had to be done outside. Let me again give you an example of what has happened since February 2018 to February 2019. We have had trips, those that are falling through the unit, of 465. So as much as we're doing as much as possible to try and correct them, the truth of the matter is that the challenges are severe, hence we want to bring more people to come and help in solving these problems. In other words, the problems that we initially identified are more than what we are beginning to see. Whereas earlier, the previous management had the capacity and had the chance and had the privilege of continuing to exhaust or to use the power station as much as they could. They say that turning them to red. We don't have that capacity because when we do so, then all the power stations trip. Then we have to fix them from time to time. That is the biggest challenge.
But we've been seeing...
So we have therefore...
Continue.
That is why we have put in another 9.5 billion investment in making sure that we deal with this issue. Because unless we deal with this issue, we'll continue to have a problem with the power stations.
Mr. Khadebe, there's been task team after task team. I mean, in December, the president appointed a team to help Eskom. There was a task team again appointed by the president earlier this year, led by the deputy president. There was a technical team appointed by Minister of Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan. Now, there are Italian engineers that are also coming. Do you think this is a vote of no confidence in your leadership? I mean, what's the management of Eskom doing now when you've got all these people that are being brought to the power utility to help manage this problem when you can do that with the help of a few engineers?
I think this is a challenge, and everyone is aware of the impact it will have on South African economy. And for that, we are apologizing. And there's nothing wrong about government deciding additional aspects to come and assist in moving this forward. And I think it would be very naive of us to think that we are the only people who can solve it. What we're trying to do, if they bring those that can help, we're willing to work with them. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we want to come up with a solution. And after today's deliberations, we put a plan as to how long is it going to take us to solve the problem. It's not going to be something that will be solved next week or a day after. But once we have a pronounced, fully well-developed plan that is going to take us in the short to medium term, then we'll have dealt with the issues.
So South Africans must basically understand that load shed their reality for the next few months, for the next few years.
Not few years, but it will be something that we'll be working on to conclude at least after 6 months or so.
All right.
After 6 months, it will be far less than where we are.
Eskom CEO.
It's a challenge we face.
Eskom CEO Phakamani Khadebe, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming through. It's 7 minutes before 1 o'clock. At 3 minutes before 1 o'clock, we just had a conversation with Eskom CEO Phakamani Khadebe, and some of you are already reacting to that interview. And just tell me if you know, sometimes you feel like it's sort of unfair to be pushing on them and saying, yeah, what are you going to do? You know, somehow you feel like, you know, you must understand that they are this new management that came in, and there are people that left that organization that led it previously, and they crippled it completely and left it with a debt of over 400 billion rand. So you also look at the kind of dodgy, corrupt, unlawful deals that were signed and were forced on Eskom by the previous management. But also you say they are the management now. Surely someone has to account. And that is why Phakamani Khadebe, whether he's just started yesterday or 2 minutes ago, the point is you've taken over this organization and you have to account. There's been teams after teams, task teams after task teams doing the work at Eskom. And it's only fair for them to come out and say, this is the extent of the problem, and say whether or not indeed this can be stopped anytime soon. Ben tweets me and says, I hear people being annoyed at Eskom and the ANC, but who has a better idea of governance that will help the current situation except to bear with it till the polls? Even the one has to be decided which party will do the least damage. Which one? That's the question that Ben is asking on Twitter. Let's go to Christine in Four Ways. Christine, thanks for your time. What's your comment?
Why would we trust the Eskom with more money when they've shown no accountability for the 300 million that they've already lost and embezzled and stolen?
That's a good question, Christine. Thank you so much. Christine calling us from Four Ways. Yolanda tweets and says, Clement, honestly speaking, who will be held to account for this load shedding problem? We can't just let people go scot-free and we are left to suffer. The Eskom board must cut salaries and fire people. Comment there from Yolanda on Twitter.